This is Judith Lay welcoming you to Manx Radio and to the podcast of this week's edition of At Your Service. Manx Radio. If you've ever cleaned a kitchen or a bathroom, or indeed anywhere that's got some tiles on the wall, you'll know that the grout between the tiles is the hardest bit to freshen up. And it's certainly not where you'd expect to find glitter. But my guest today did indeed find glitter in the grout, and he'll be joining me shortly to tell us that story and quite a few others, after some music from the woman known as the Queen of Gospel Songwriters. This is the Celebration Choir and Moments of Prayer. Hear from the world we turn, Jesus to seek. Here may his loving voice tenderly speak. Moments of Prayer, from the pen of Fanny Crosby, one of America's most prolific hymn writers. Despite losing her sight when she was 6 weeks old and not starting her hymn writing career until she was 44, she wrote between 8,000 and 9,000 hymns and gospel songs. She used almost 200 pseudonyms to avoid having too many hymns attributed to her in any single hymn book. And one of her most popular hymns, Blessed Assurance, will feature later in the programme, as the words of its refrain match perfectly with a message my guest brings us today. their national conference in June each year, the Methodist Church choose a president and vice president who will be in office for the coming year and will effectively be the ambassadors, the faces and voices of the Methodist Church, spending their year in office travelling all over the Methodist connection. One is always a layperson and the other an ordained minister. But the titles are very misleading. President and vice president suggest that one is secondary to the other. But that's absolutely not the case. They are equal partners in this ministry, and the presidency would really reflect this more accurately. The current presidency is Reverend Richard Andrew and Matthew Forsyth, elected at last year's conference and serving till June this year. Reverend Richard Andrew is currently chair of the Darlington District of the Methodist Church. He's married to Debbie, a former teacher and now a church and community worker in Teesdale, and they have two grown-up children. Vice President of Conference is Matthew Forsyth, a local preacher and steward. He's the mission team leader in the Northampton Methodist District, working with a team of lay and ordained leaders. Matt remains firm in his calling to lay leadership. He's a trustee of a Christian schools charity in his home of Peterborough and enjoys being available as a mentor to teenagers. Matt is married to Amy. They have three children and a cockapoo. Matt wasn't able to join Richard when he travelled to the island a couple of weeks ago. And whilst his visit here was only a short one, Reverend Richard Andrew very kindly spared me some time to record this conversation.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's lovely to see you here. Tell me a little bit, if you would, Richard, about your background, please.
So I'm originally from North Yorkshire, from a town called Nathallerton. I didn't really have much to do with the church at all. In fact, I guess you characterise my family as kind of folk Anglicans, really. Christenings and weddings and funerals, that was about the extent of our involvement. About the age of 15, my girlfriend finished with me. Well, we've been going out for 2 weeks, so it's a serious relationship. 15, there's a lot of disappointment at that age. And a friend came around the corner and he said, I'm going out to the Methodist Youth Club, would you like to come? So I went down with him, and the deal in those days was that if you went to the youth club, and one of the attractions of the youth club was there was plenty of girls there, but if you went to the youth club, you had to go either to the youth fellowship or to church on a Sunday. Church didn't sound that attractive, so I went to the youth fellowship because there were a lot of very similar people around. And I found myself full of questions, actually. I don't think any life is untouched by God, just maybe unrecognised. And I had a whole series of questions, and I was beginning, I think, to kind of experience something of the kind of the quality of life in some of the people around me that I'd not noticed before, that I wanted something of. That's how I kind of reflect on it now. And then at the age of 17, we went away on a youth weekend to a place called Marrick Priory in Swaledale in North Yorkshire, which is a beautiful, beautiful setting. At the end of the weekend, the minister who was leading us very gently said to us, some of you may be having a kind of sense that God is calling you to something. If you do, just step forward and we'll pray for you. And that's all that happened. And I had a very distinct feeling at that point that I now kind of describe in just two words. The words were follow me, that Jesus was just saying, follow me. And I think I've been trying to make sense of that ever since. Even now, I'm trying to unfold the mystery of those words and what they mean for me today. And I think my Christian journey started then, but that particular experience threw a lot of my life in the air because I didn't have any reference points for my faith. I didn't quite know how to make sense of faith because nobody had ever spoken to me about it before, other than that, a couple of years in a youth club. So in the end, I took a year off, didn't go off to university, and in the end went and did philosophy and theology at King's College in London, just to try and make sense of what's this all about. So I moved from a rural town into London, moved into Brixton on the second night of the Brixton riots. So it was all this kind of wonderful colliding experiences, really.
The thing that so often characterises a faith journey is a person, just a person being themselves. That youngster who said, you look a bit down, come to the youth club. And then the people around you who were just being themselves, but had something that you were attracted to, was something about them. And there's a lesson for everybody, isn't there? We just have to be ourselves and live with that faith inside us. Interesting, the words that you had, follow me. Mm. Those words are different to a 17, 18-year-old. Mm. The words are different when you're a young father, when you're helping your own children. children to carve their future when they're becoming young adults. Those words follow me are different at every stage of our life.
Recent story that just illustrates what you've said. So when I was in that kind of period in my late teens, there was a couple at the Methodist Church in Nathallerton, the minister and his wife, Frank and Edith Bramall. Frank sadly died a few years back. Who were very important to me and my wife, actually, in terms of our faith journey. I met my wife in the Methodist Youth Clubs. So as part of the presidency in September, I was invited to go along to a rural ministry course to be part of a question and answer session, which was out on the North Yorkshire Moors. And it was in the afternoon. I thought, well, I've got plenty of time to travel. What should I do on the way? Edith lived nearby in Pickering, you see. So I thought, well, I'll call in on Edith. I've not seen her for years. So I popped into Edith, who's now a sprightly 91 years of age. And we had a wonderful time together, had a coffee together. And then she said to me, she said, could you come into our Bible study group, she said, which was meeting next door, because they've never seen a president before. And so I said, oh, yeah, that's fine. I went in next door, talked to people. And then she said, 91 years of age, she said, now we're going to pray for you. It was a sense of actually they've been important and precious to me then. And then she was almost kind of recommissioning me for the next stage. Here was somebody at 91 years of age who was still exploring what it meant to follow me. So I think that's a really important lesson for all of us. Daily we're asking that question and making sense of it in our lives.
So Richard, from a lovely present day story, let's go back to those university days.
During university life, I began to kind of feel a calling into local preaching ministry, which was maybe pulling me towards ordination. You know, ordination is, I mean, really, it's just a name for people who are disciples who have been set aside for a particular purpose. For me, anyway, it's not a kind of hierarchy of discipleship or ministry. And I began that both in London and in rural North Yorkshire. I was exploring that calling, but I felt I wanted to get some earthed working life, really, some experience. And so I did a natural thing for a Methodist. I went and worked for a brewery. So, I mean, initially in Brighton, working for Watney Truman. So I managed an estate of 60 pubs in Hampshire, first of all, and then I moved into free trade, so it's working men's clubs, British Legions, and, you know, free houses and so on. And then I moved north and worked for Courage, John Smith's national sales team. So it was really then dealing with the larger groupings, so, you know, the army, student unions, the big nightclubs and so on. And it was a really rich and varied time, actually. I mean, actually, a lot of the skills that I learned then I still use now. I'm not an accountant, but I can read a set of accounts, for instance, or I'm not a lawyer, but if somebody shows me something to do with a lease or something, I know roughly what's going on. I need to ask advice. So it's given me a lot of things that I've taken with me. Anyway, I was working for Courage. We were quite happy in life, actually. Life was quite comfortable. And the call became stronger. And I remember the minister in the church that I was in, which is in Darlington, which is actually where I've gone back to now. He came up to me and he said, I think God's calling you to ministry. And suddenly I just felt, yes, I think this is right. It was as simple as that. Anyway, a couple of weeks after, with my boss at Courage, a wonderful man called Bernard Lee, and he said, you're doing well. He said, I think we'd like you to move up a level. We wonder whether you might move to Blackpool, you see. So I told him, I said, look, I think I'm being called into ministry. And he said to me, he said, okay, that's fine. You stay what you're doing. And he said, you explore it and we will support you all the way through. They were wonderful, actually. And that's what they did. So there's like another year, continued working at Courage, explored that call through what we call candidating. And they said goodbye to me. And I went off to study in Cambridge at Wesley House in Cambridge. Methodist Training Institution, and I was there for 4 years in total, so I did some postgraduate work whilst I was there. At the end of my first year, I had two quite significant placements for me in terms of my, I think, ongoing conversion, really. The first one was I went to Belfast during the Troubles, and so I was in the East Belfast Mission. First night I was in, they put me into this centre for recovering alcoholics. That was in itself was interesting because actually, you know, it was a place that was filled with an ethos of faith, and yet people were, you know, living with an addiction or overcoming their addiction. So day by day I was sharing meals in that context. And then, you know, I remember first morning that I was there and the minister Jim coming in and saying, did you hear that sound last night that sounded like a garage door crashing? I said, oh yes, I heard that. So that was a bomb going off over on the west side of Belfast. And the area I was in was a strongly loyalist area dominated by the UDA, the Ulster Defence Association, with a small Catholic enclave called the Short Strand. It's where the more recent Troubles of 69 kind of broke out in that area. You know, I mean, you kind of witnessed members of the UDA coming into the church office and Jim engaging with them about community disputes and how that might be handled, and the kind of sense of the church right at the front line, well before the Good Friday Agreement, of the church in the background quietly engaging in this reconciling ministry. It's very, very powerful. And then my wife and I, actually, we went and we worked in the townships of South Africa for the rest of the summer. We were there for about 6 weeks. It was about 18 months after Nelson Mandela had been released, but it was before the first free elections, which were in 94. So apartheid and its structures were still in place. So we worked in a township near Pretoria called Atteridgeville, and then we went down to a township near Cape Town called Khayelitsha, which is a sprawling shanty town, 900,000 people, and then you'd have a street of people with one tap and, you know, sewage-like slurry running down it, and yet the most vibrant, alive faith right in the midst of that. And an encounter with poverty, really, which I'd not seen anything quite like this. I remember on one occasion speaking at a women's manana group, and they would sing for like an hour or so in a way in which only South African women can sing. Oh, it's just extraordinary. And then I spoke through a translator, and then an elderly woman getting up with tears streaming down her face and saying through a translator, "I've been praying for 30 years for this moment." And what she'd been praying for was the moment when black and white would be reconciled in South Africa. And my presence there, it could have been anybody else, just happened to be me, had been a symbol that now was the time. And she'd been praying for 30 years for that. And you think, wow, how do you do that? How do you keep hope alive when hope doesn't seem to be possible? And every day, you know, something is telling you this is never going to happen. And then in a moment, somehow, it's arrived. And that was an amazing thing, because in many ways, it had nothing to do with me. And yet, at the same time, I was a catalyst for that. You know, it's an amazing, a humbling experience to be part of something in a way that you just cannot imagine. And I think that again, was a kind of second conversion experience for me, really. I think I became more aware of issues around justice, around poverty and so on, through those experiences in a way that I hadn't before.
Oh!
This is my story, this is my song. Words from that Fanny Crosby hymn, Blessed Assurance, is the theme that the Presidency of the Methodist Church, my guest today, Reverend Richard Andrew, and Vice President Matthew Forsyth, have chosen for their year in office, as Richard Andrew is now going to explain to us. And by the way, this is where we get the story about the glitter in the grout.
The presidency is the shared ministry, so Matt Forsyth is the vice president this year. The first responsibility is really chairing the conference. So the conference will bring all of its business together, all its reflection on what God is saying to the church, and we'll come to some conclusions. We also bring with us a theme for the year. So the theme that Matt and I have brought this year is called Our Story, Our Song, because we believe everybody's got a story to tell. Everybody's got a song to sing, but we're also very conscious of stories that are missing that we need to hear and listen to. And then the primary part of the work is what's called a ministry of visitation around the whole of the Methodist Church in Great Britain, you know, Scotland, England, Wales, and the islands. So Isle of Man, Shetland, Channel Islands. And part of the stipulation is that the president or the vice president must go to each of the islands each year. So there will always be a visit. And the ministry of visitation is primarily about bringing from the conference a word of encouragement and also listening very carefully and taking that back into the life of the church. When you see the kind of bigger picture of what people are doing, it's quite extraordinary. Just to give you an example, 2 weeks ago I was down in the southwest of England. I was at a hairdressing salon called Rev 7, a new project which the Methodist Church in that district had started. It's an area where there's significant amounts of addiction, homelessness, poverty, and on a Wednesday of every week they'll offer free haircuts to people who have addictions, people who are homeless, and if they need new clothes or whatever, they have an arrangement with the charity shop a couple of doors down to offer new clothes as well, trim men's beards or shave them, or they'll do women's hair. And these are people who are often been really struggling in life. One young man there, he'd been sleeping out in a tent in the woods. He'd had addiction problems, he'd been selling his body and encountered Christian love in this place and was baptized in the sea. You know, things were not perfect, but he was telling his story in a way of, this is a life transformed. Darren, who's the minister there, just taking me around the salon, and he showed me the tiles on the wall and the grout in between the tiles, and he said, we've deliberately put some glitter in the grout in between the tiles, he said, because our mission is to look for the glitter in the grout. And I thought, actually, that sums it all up. At our best, the church is looking for the glitter in the grout.
Thank you to my guest this morning, President of the Methodist Conference, Reverend Richard Andrew. Well, as you probably know, Mars has landed. Another of artist Luke Jerram's touring astronomical artworks is in the cathedral from now until the 2nd of March. The cathedral will be open every day from 9 a.m. through until at least 9 p.m. each evening, with a programme of over 40 different events happening under Mars. There are printed programmes in the cathedral, and there's also a specially dedicated Facebook page, Mars in Peel, where you can see all the events day by day. There's one event this week that I'm specially looking forward to. It's on Wednesday the 12th, when we welcome a visitor, Reverend Professor David Wilkinson. He's a British Methodist minister, a theologian, an astrophysicist, and an academic. Until quite recently, he was the principal of St John's College in Durham, and now he's the director of an international project called Equipping Christian Leadership in an Age of Science. And as I had the privilege of meeting and talking with him when last he visited the island, I can tell you he's a brilliantly entertaining speaker. He's passionate about explaining that belief in God and being a scientist are not two opposing points of view. And with that in mind, his talk in the cathedral on Wednesday night is called The Search for God, Can Science Help? And just to give you an idea of his style, here he is answering the question, what is a kiss?
A kiss for a scientist is very simple. It's the approach of two pairs of lips, the reciprocal transmission of carbon dioxide and microbes, and the juxtaposition of two orbicular muscles in a state of contraction. That's a kiss, scientifically. But if I go to my wife and say to Alison, let's get together for a mutual transmission of carbon dioxide and microbes. Let me juxtapose my orbicular muscle in a state of contraction with yours. She would obviously say, get lost. You see, in that context with my wife, one describes a kiss in terms of meaning, value, purpose, love. What's the true definition of a kiss? Is it the one about carbon dioxide, or is it the one about meaning and value? Both are true, but different. And therefore, it's not a matter of one or the other. Actually, both are informative in helping to understand the nature of the world. And so when it comes to the early universe, I'm very happy for Professor Hawking and others to be able to say, yes, we can understand how the universe emerged in a quantum fluctuation through a period of inflation into a Big Bang universe. But at the same time, there are why questions. What's the purpose or value of the universe? They're different types of questions, but both are important.
Reverend Professor David Wilkinson will be talking in the cathedral on Wednesday night at 7:30. It's very appropriately under Mars, which will add to the atmosphere, and admission is free. David will also be the guest speaker when the Ireland Spirituality Network meets again on Saturday the 14th in St John's Mill. The morning begins at 10 a.m. and ends at 1 p.m. with a break for coffee. David Wilkinson will be talking about how God works in the world through science, miracles and mission. So an entirely different talk from the one in the cathedral on Wednesday evening. The Ireland Spirituality Network suggests a donation of £10 if you're able, but it's entirely voluntary and all are welcome. And now let's take a look at some other items on this week's notice board, beginning today. Port Erin Gospel Church welcome you to their services this morning at 11:30 and this evening at 7 p.m. Mr. David Gibson from Northern Ireland will preach at both services. This afternoon at 3 o'clock in Kirkmaloo, Perry Bain Dancers will enhance the afternoon worship as Reverend Ruth Walker leads a celebration of Candlemas. And then tonight, Reverend Ruth will be back at the Abbey Church in Ballasalla to preach at the Mariners service there, starting at 6:30. And as usual, it'll be followed by supper and community hymn singing. Looking now to the week ahead, and the Bride Wesley Guild meet again tomorrow, Monday night, at 7:30. And if you're planning to come along, I'd recommend that you come early, because this is going to be a very popular evening. Dilys Sowry, well known as a musician, is also an excellent photographer, and she's showing some of her pictures. It's a free evening. Everyone's welcome at this long-established social group. It starts at 7:30 in Bride Methodist Church Hall, and there will, of course, be refreshments. There's a lovely event starting on Friday in Christchurch in Laxey. Just the thing to cheer us up, as spring hasn't quite arrived yet. It's a paper flower festival in Christchurch in Laxey, open each day over Valentine's weekend, Friday the 13th to Monday the 16th of February. The church, by the train station in the heart of Laxey, will be open daily from 10:30 to 4 p.m. and serving delicious cakes and refreshments. All the exhibits have been lovingly created by the Christchurch Craft and Coffee Group, and they look forward to seeing you there. And that's all that we've time for now, but I'll be back tonight at 9 o'clock with Sundown, and I'd love you to come and join me in our virtual lounge for a great selection of easy listening music, plus your requests and dedications. And so, until whenever we meet again, this is Judith saying thank you for listening and wishing you and those you love a blessed and peaceful week and a very good morning.
The Nation Station, Manx Radio.